This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Born Sequel and DB Snitch. DB Snitch is a once-off report service resulting in an in-depth examination of your existing database instances and recommendations to bring them up to industry standards, ensuring that your data is safe. DB Snitch gives you a comprehensive view of where your database currently stands, along with a customized game plan to get it to where it needs to be. Of course, Born Sequel offers both on-site and remote support. Find out more at bornsequel.ca/dbsnitch or by contacting Randolph West via email at info@bornsequel.ca with the keyword discover in the subject line. Welcome to episode 19 of Discover ADN. My name is Jason Irwin, and I am the host of this program. The goal of Discover ADN is to learn more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people that use app.net to communicate with the world, as well as offer us a chance to attach a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to DiscoverADN. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Aidan Clark, who goes by the name Snorkel, without the vowels, on app.net. He describes himself as a purveyor of fine tubes and clouds, enjoys photography, and is not anywhere near the far western part of southeast North Dakota. Please join me in welcoming Aidan to Discover ADN. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me on the podcast.
And thank you for joining us. So let's get right down to business. Can you tell us, when did you join app.net?
Actually, I had to think about this the other day when I was listening to your the podcast episode with Rabarist. I was trying to figure this out. I think it was reasonably early in the piece. I'm busily trying to open up my app.net profile while I'm talking to you on the phone as well. I think it was after the Kickstarter, but before, it was definitely before they dropped the price from $50 to $35. So while I'm saying this, I'm busily trying to find my profile on app.net, and it's not actually showing it to me. I think it was in August at some stage, the year that it was opened, in April or August, one of the two.
Well, according to Felix, you are user number 17,249, and that means August 24th.
There we go. Very good. If only it was August or April, one of those months that begins with A.
Okay, and on that note, can you tell us why you joined app.net?
I was sick of Twitter, is the short answer. I'm one of those people that... I've got a background in InfoSec, I've always been of the opinion that if you don't pay for something, you are more than likely the product. So once Twitter announced that they were going to go public and they started using, started selling access to the global feed, I thought this is something that I don't really want to be involved in anymore. So when the app.net stuff caught my attention, the fact that they had a business model that didn't rely on them selling users' data, really resonated with me. So, I mean, I'm sort of in the process at the moment of slowly migrating away from Gmail, running my own mail server and a few other bits and pieces just because, I have concerns over, you know, just exactly how much data we scatter around the world and what nefarious things it may or may not be used for, at a later date. So that's my main reason.
All right. You use a pseudonym on app.net. Can you tell us, where does Snorkel without the vowels come from?
Somehow I knew this was going to come up. There are no vowels in it because, that's a Unix thing from way back. So, because vowels are overrated anyway and they take longer to type. The main reason it has no vowels is because when I was dished out this nickname of Snorkel, I decided rather than fighting it, I would embrace it to hope that it would possibly go away, but it didn't. So snorkel.org without any vowels was available. So the absence of vowels not only made it shorter to type, but I got the domain name to match very, very quickly. But snorkel was a nickname that was given to me when I was working for F5 Networks. And there's probably only three or four people in the world, maybe four or five actually, who know the real reason. So that's probably the way that it's going to stay for today's episode. But let's just say that there's a war story to go with that one.
Let me ask you this next question. Is there anything that you would like to see more of on app.net?
One of the things I really love about app.net is the ability for integration into other platforms. It took me a little while to realize that app.net was more than just alpha, was more than just what alpha provided. I really like the idea of app.net being a platform for social networking as well as it being a social networking platform, if that makes sense. So I'm always looking for ways to leverage app.net in interesting ways. So I've got a news bot called @SDN, which stands for Snorkel Daily News. And I got sick of trying to manage RSS feeds across multiple laptops and other bits and pieces. So I'm using pour over, for example, to aggregate a bunch of news feeds that I follow on a daily basis. And so I've got one of those dreaded accounts that Rabarist hates that spews if this, then that, and pour over stuff out there. But it's not really meant for anybody else. It's somebody that I follow with my account just because it means that my timeline is interspersed with the news stuff that I find interesting. And I've actually been quite interested that there's actually a few people following my news bot, which I thought was, a bit of a compliment. But so, I mean, I use it for those sorts of things. I've also, I work for a company called Riverbed doing what they call application delivery controllers, which is essentially advanced load balancing for web and other sort of application workloads. So I've actually got all of the load balancers that I look after in my dog food environment are actually using app.net as a notification channel. So I get my load balancers sending me private messages when things go up and down and when things go right and wrong. So I'm kind of interested in new and novel ways of actually leveraging the platform to innovate and to, one, have fun, and two, make your life easier. So I'm all for people using it for connecting to the Internet of Things and other bits and pieces. So
does this mean that one day you may have your refrigerator sending you posts reminding you to buy more milk?
Well, it's funny actually, because as I said before, I've got an InfoSec background, and I remember people talking about will we ever get to a point where you need to firewall your home phone, and we were talking about firewalls and home networks, and I said, well, when your fridge is connected to the internet, and I guarantee you want to firewall it when somebody can make a phone call to your house and switch your fridge off. So I think it's interesting. It's an interesting opportunity to connect to the Internet of Things. Not that I have that many things that I want or have the ability to internet connect at the moment, but I don't know. Maybe in the next house I have, if we ever get a chance to build our dream home, we might have a more advanced level of home automation that might make all sorts of things interesting and fun.
All right, let's change gears a little bit. Can you tell us, what do you like to be known for?
I guess, what do I like to be known for? I guess that's a very different question to what am I usually known for. I'm usually known for being the guy that isn't backwards about coming forwards with an opinion. I typically am pretty straight down the line in telling people what I think. What would I like to be known for? I don't know. I dabble in photography, and if I ever could find a way to make photography pay what working for an IT vendor pays, I think I'd probably jump in a heartbeat. I don't know. I think that's a very interesting question. It's hard to answer that one without sounding like a total tech douchebag jerkface as well. So I don't know. Maybe I can ask you a question in reverse. We've been connected on app.net for a while. What do you think I'm known for?
What are you known for? Well, judging from my timeline, I would say you are known for disappearing for long intervals and popping up every so often to talk about tech.
Which just makes me a father of two kids with a busy job and a tech douchebag. Awesome.
I don't know. I wouldn't consider you a tech douchebag. I'd consider you more of a What's that term used for somebody who follows a popular company?
A tech douchebag.
Ah, well, there we go.
Hey, I did get some of Blenderhead's t-shirts made up. In fact, I think I ordered the lion's share of those tech douchebag t-shirts. I think there was 10 or 11 made, and I think I ordered 6 of them. So,
ah, the Dilbert fashion model. Okay. Earlier you had mentioned that you enjoy photography. Can you tell us what kind of photography do you enjoy?
I used to travel 5 days a week domestically and a little bit of international. So I used to do a lot of sort of cityscape and landscape photography. So I'm very fond of messing with very, very good wide-angle lenses and doing landscapes. I also quite enjoy portrait photography and getting candid portraits. So stuff that isn't necessarily studio lit and you know, with hair and makeup done. I quite like you know, sneaking up on people when they're engrossed in interesting conversation and snapping photos that capture somebody's character when they're not really paying attention. So that to me is very rewarding as well.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Okay, let me ask you another question. You've recently put a lot of effort into losing some weight.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the reason for this health change?
You mean other than getting to the point where I was a fat so-and-so?
Yeah, other than that.
Just generally, you know, wanting to be around more, I guess. Until about 18 months ago, I was traveling 5 days a week, living in hotels and eating in restaurants 5 days a week. So I sort of packed on quite a few kilos. But no, I've actually managed to lose, I think it was 15 kilos I figured out I've lost in the last 6 months. So that's 33 pounds for those that are imperially inclined. So yeah, I think it's just generally, just feeling better about myself, looking better, not feeling like I'm bursting out of clothing all the time. And I quite enjoy running. I find that the days that I run, I tend to be happier and more productive throughout the course of the day. So,
well, congratulations on the weight loss. Is there any advice that you could give somebody who's not overweight but would like to lose a few pounds?
Stop making excuses. I've got a motto when it comes to exercise. It doesn't have to be fast. It's just got to be 5. So as long as I'm doing 5Ks when I run, it doesn't matter whether it takes me, I think I got it down to 29 minutes at one stage. And after a bit of a hiatus, I'm still doing it in sort of 34, 35 minutes at the moment. So I'm still about a minute per kilometer off the pace, which is not insignificant. But yeah, it doesn't have to be fast. It's just got to be 5. The other thing is that I found if I just stopped eating crap, that was the other major thing that made my life a lot easier as well. So.
Oh, come on. It's the crap that tastes so good.
Yeah, it is that crap that tastes so good. But yeah, I don't know. I find that once I get into a cycle and I start to see the, you know, start to see a little bit of weight loss and start to feel better, I find it, I don't need it.
Well, I will have to take your rule of 5 to heart. Okay. Can you tell us, do you have any future goals?
Future goals? I'm trying to find a way to get my 8-year-old son more interested in programming. I found a spark. He's a massive Minecraft fan, so he was working through the Youth Digital learning Java by modifying Minecraft. But I think he's kind of got to the point where he's, for an 8-year-old, the Java's getting a little complex. So I think he needs a little bit more assistance. But I guess spending some more one-on-one time with him without his 5-year-old brother jumping all over us while we're trying to do something techie, I think is something I'd like to spend more time doing. And actually, getting back into my photography, I have not really picked up my camera in anger in the last sort of 12, 18 months. So I think that's something I need to spend a little bit more time reconnecting with.
It's interesting that you want to teach your son programming. Is this something that he wants to do, or is this something that you hope to teach your children in the event they need these skills at some point in the future?
It's interesting because I've never been, it's funny, I'd never lied to anyone about being the sporting type. So I'm not the kind of dad that, you know, when I think I've got 10 minutes to spare, let's go kick a football around, or let's go play soccer, or let's go play tennis or badminton or any of those sorts of sports. I mean, we go for bike rides and those sorts of things and take the kids to the park. But I've always been technically inclined myself, and my son is quite technical as well. It was actually funny. He's got a couple of very good school friends that he FaceTimes with on his little iPad mini most nights. And the other night he was talking to a little girl that he used to go to school with, and I overheard him doing tech support, trying to help her. Somebody had trashed the Safari icon off the dock on her Mac, and so he was snapping her through how to use Spotlight to find it and put it back on the dock again. So I was, you know, kind of had to smile a little bit to myself that here's my 8-year-old son doing tech support, which I thought was kind of cool. But he's quite technically inclined, and he quite enjoys it. So I think it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. I remember, you know, back in the old Amiga 500 days, buying magazines and having to wait for 8 months worth of magazines to get the page and a half of code you had to painstakingly type out, and it would be, you know, wasn't until sort of 9 months after you started the project you'd have something that would actually compile and run once you'd bought all the magazines and painstakingly typed and debugged all the code. So it's interesting trying to find a way to engage with kids to help them understand that the internet is more than just Facebook and your iPhone. He and I have got a little Raspberry Pi project we're working on at the moment where he's sort of learning Scratch and those sorts of things as an interactive visual programming language. And I'm just starting to get my head around how the GPIO expansion port on the Raspberry Pi works, so we can start building projects with physical buttons and lights and those sorts of things. But he kind of gets a kick out of the little electronics projects we've started doing, like making electromagnets and circuits that light up and those sorts of things. I'm of the opinion that being able to program and code is something that's probably going to become more relevant in the future moving forward for people who want to actually affect change in the world. I'm not suggesting we teach homeless people to code rather than helping them find, you know, steady work and and food. But I think for kids that are growing up, that are a little bit gifted and a little bit clever, I think learning to program is probably an important skill that they can add to their repertoire.
As somebody who works in information security, how will you go about teaching your children the importance of being safe and responsible online?
I had this debate with Phoneboy a couple of, probably about 6 months ago now, because Phoneboy, or Damien, has a home computing environment that's locked down like an enterprise one, where his kids can't install apps and, there's limits on what they're allowed to access and net nanny software and those sorts of things. And I don't know, I spent a little bit of time doing solutions architecture for a state education back in Canberra, which is my hometown, for a little bit, as they were going into what they called their digital education revolution. And I kind of came out of that with the feeling that I think as a parent, there's a duty of care to make sure your kids don't get to the stuff that's really quite dangerous for them, that warps fragile little minds. But we have a policy in my house of transparency and accountability. So we don't have any software that filters what websites they go to or any of those sorts of things. But there are some things that I do just to keep a little bit of an eye on things. And we sort of encourage our kids to be honest and have taught them that the internet is a place that that requires you to be, you need to have stranger danger and environmental awareness on the internet, and that not every website is appropriate for an 8-year-old. So I don't know. I think we're probably getting to a point with my 8-year-old where we might have to move the iMac from the study out into the family room, just so there's a little bit more visibility of what's going on. But I don't know. I think I'd prefer to teach them to have safe surfing habits and to understand what the internet is and what it can be and what they should do with it, rather than having a policy of enforcement and punishment or those sorts of things. Because at the end of the day, kids will always find, I've got an InfoSec background, breaking out of controls is what I used to do for a living. So, people will always find a way around those systems. So rather than trying to build a better jail, I'm, more interested in building aware internet citizens from a young age.
That sounds like a full-time job.
It can be. We've had many conversations about the implications of continually watching YouTube videos with swearing in it, for example. There's been a couple of times where some inappropriate language has been picked up, and when we start to dig a little bit, we're very lucky. My son's very honest, and we'll usually fess up to what he's been doing. But we've had a couple of conversations where if he wasn't able to manage his own behavior in not seeking out things that he knew he wasn't supposed to be watching, I keep saying to him, you know, I can turn off YouTube. I have the power. I don't want to do it because, to be honest, it's quite frankly a massive pain in the ass to do. But you know, if needs be, I will turn off YouTube and you'll just lose your access to YouTube. So, you know, that tends to be enough of a, you know, there's enough of, I think, enough of a carrot for him to know that if he does the right thing, you know, he'll always have our support. But if we repeatedly catch him doing the wrong things, then there might be a loss of privileges for a while. So.
Well, that certainly sounds like a very pragmatic approach to the situation.
I hope it is. Time will tell. If my child becomes the next internet stalker, serial killer, murderer, you know, in 15 or 20 years' time, let's just pretend that I was doing something different.
Yes, just let me know and I can delete this episode.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's move on to the final part of our show, and this is when we get to recommend some of the people in our timeline that we enjoy communicating with. So could you share with us three people who you would recommend, as well as the reason why?
So I'm going to give you 3+1, because while I was thinking about it before, I thought of another one that I wanted to add, and it's somebody I don't think has been mentioned yet. So I get quite a kick out of Phoneboy, generally living his life online. So I spend a lot of time laughing at the stuff that he posts. Plus, on top of that, he's a big No Agenda fan as well, which resonates with me. The three that I'd add would be Blenderhead, the original tech douchebag, who's a part-time marketing tech guy and a part-time comedian. So I tend to find he is very quick-witted and very quick with the... quick with the retorts, which is always fun to listen to. Jody M, so Jodiem, who's actually somebody that I've worked with here in Australia in the past, who spends a lot of time on Twitter, but also a bit of time on app.net, who I find fun to engage with online. And Sophistafunk, who is a guy that... he and I used to go to school in Canberra, although we never actually went to school together. We actually had some communal friends, and I had cause to catch up with him a couple of years ago down in Melbourne, and caught up and had a couple of drinks. And I think I was actually the one that mentioned app.net to him. I'm not sure, but yeah, he joined, and yeah, he's always one to join the fracas. But so yeah, so Sophistafunk's another No Agenda listener, which is kind of cool as well. So. Yeah, so those are the three that I'd have. JDM, Sophistafunk, and Blenderhead.
All right. Well, thank you very much for those recommendations, and thank you again for being my guest today.
Always a pleasure.
And this concludes the 19th episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I would like to thank Aiden for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10, centuries.com. And I would also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Born Sequel. Have a nice day.